Hi everyone, my name's Susan and I'm an addict.
Hi Susan.
And I'm feeling really, really nervous. And what I'd want to do right now is just like ask God to, you know, to take all of me, you know, good and bad, and remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to Him and His and my fellows right now, so that I could go out or even share and carry a message to you guys, you know, to just do God's bidding. Because for me, I know that I can be good sometimes and I surely can be bad most of the times, you know. And I kind of like thank God as well that this is about spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. Because I can remember before even coming into recovery, I used to think that I had to get it all right. You know, I had to be really perfect, get it all right. And I could never do that. And because I couldn't do that, I used to beat myself up, you know, and just think that I wasn't worth it. I was useless because I was making mistakes. And what recovery has taught me, you know, is that I can make mistakes. You know, I'm not going to get it all right. And as I said, yeah, I thank God for that, you know, because God will take me good and bad. And that, for me, is a saving grace, you know. I don't know, yeah, I've got 15 minutes to share my experience, strength and hope. So what I've got to do now is just briefly sketch over my using. You know, I'm here because I took drugs, drank alcohol, took any drug, really. It weren't just strictly crack or heroin, you know, it was ecstasy and cannabis, ash, Tippex, Finnar, you know, and I couldn't stop, you know. When I first started using, it was at school. Well, yeah, when I first started using drugs, but alcohol, I'd use it at family parties at a young age. My mum used to give me Guinness punch and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, my illness, it tells me that it's a progressive illness, and it progressed over about 10 years from the age of 11 to the age of 20. It progressed from Tippex, Finnar, ash, marijuana, cocaine, then crack cocaine. And in 1989, I met crack cocaine, and that was a complete nightmare till 2002. And I smoked continuously, and I went to any lengths to smoke these drugs, you know. And one of my greatest obsessions, because I used to obsess about drugs all the time, yeah? Where am I going to get it? Who am I going to get it from? How much am I going to get? Where am I going to smoke it? All that sort of stuff. But one of my greatest obsessions was, how am I going to control it? You know, I just want to have one and then not smoke anymore. But every time I had that one, I'd be, you know, I'd want to smoke at home, like, let me just have a peaceful smoke, and then I'd end up in a crack house, you know, and I couldn't ever understand that. What are you doing here, Susan? You know, and I'd try it again. And then, you know, I ended up in prison. I got a 7-year prison sentence and all that stuff, you know, that's all my saving grace, you know. I turned my house into a crack house. This is for the second time. I turned my house into a crack house, and the police come, you know, with guns and all that sort of stuff. And I pleaded not guilty because I was rife with dishonesty. I didn't know what honesty was. You know, recovery has taught me a lot. I didn't know what being honest was. So even though the drugs was on my premises, I said they weren't mine. That's not mine. You didn't find that in my house, you know. And the drugs are looking at me in the face. Anyway, I got guilty and I got a 7-year prison sentence for conspiracy to supply. And even in prison, I was still using drugs. You know, I just couldn't stop. And I don't know, I just felt, I know that I felt a lot of guilt and I felt a lot of shame within myself and a lot of regret and a lot of remorse because I've got a daughter and I was never ever there for my daughter, you know, there was bare neglection and all that stuff. And I had to live with all this stuff in my head and I was really, really angry and I was resentful with my dad, resentful with my mum for meeting him and having me. You know, all what was going on in my head was like murder, kill, horrible people, I don't want to be here, society's horrible, I just want to die, suicide, just all negative stuff that if I took my head off and put it down in front of you guys, even you would run with the stuff that was going on in my head. So I was just running from my own head. You know, the illness was centering in my mind. It was all going on in my head. And when I got to prison, I was angry again. The judge sentenced me, bastard, it weren't my fault. What am I doing here? I just want to get out, couldn't get out. And I'd use the drugs and the drugs didn't work, you know, because I was still using drugs in jail, even drinking alcohol in prison, you know. And it was just not working. And then I can remember, you know, just fast forwarding the tape, 2002, I asked for help. No, 2002, I don't know, the book that I read talks about a psychic change, yeah, and I believe that I had that. My thinking started changing, right? And I started admitting to some stuff. I was like admitting to myself, like, you know what, I can't go on like this anymore. I'm in trouble and I need help. And I was admitting this stuff to myself, and that was the start. And what happened in 2003, September 2003, I went to a carrot worker and I spoke to her and I said to her, and I used to go to her groups and I used to, you know, say, yeah, what, relapse prevention? I can go and buy a rock and get a job and just have one pipe and everything will be all right. That was never my experience, but because everybody else was saying that, I just joined in, you know, so I just sit there and say that stuff. And then in 2003, as I said, I went to her and I put my hands up and I said all the words that they say in NA, you know, I was like, I surrender. You know, and I said, I'll go to Timbuktu. Just anywhere you got to send me, I'll go, just to never ever use drugs again. You know, but I never mentioned the alcohol. And she told me that NA comes in and goes to meetings and stuff. NA comes in and takes a meeting on the rat wing. So I said, all right then, what's NA? I didn't know what NA was or anything. But I went there again, you know, I listened, I had an open mind, and I went to the meeting. And I don't know what this woman shared in the meeting, but all I know is I was sitting there saying to myself, because I used to always talk to myself, you know, the conversation was going on with Susan, because it was all about me, you know, and I used to have it in my head. And the conversation that went on in my head at that time, in that meeting in the prison, was, yeah, all right, how do I never, ever have to not take crack cocaine again, you know? How do I ever, never have to not steal from my mum again? You know, these were the thoughts that was going on in my head. And the woman, she picked up a Just For Today keyring, and she says, and if you're sitting there wondering how you never ever have to use drugs again, just tell yourself, just for today, you don't have to use. And I was freaked. I was like, what? How did she know? How did she hear what was going on in my head? Anyway, I got up. By this time, I was 16 months clean, though, and I got up and I picked up a keyring. And then, you know, I got parole and I got out 2 months after that, 18 months clean, and I went into a treatment centre in Bournemouth. I really listened to what, because I needed help and I was really, really desperate, right? I hit rock bottoms many times, and all the time I say, you know, I'm not going to do it again, and then that thought would come. I'd forget that I said I'm not going to do it again, and then it would be, let's just have one. But anyway, you know, this time I was serious, I was desperate, I was like a drowning woman, you know. I got to the train station, and the thought came in my head, why don't you just go back to London, get yourself a bottle of champagne, and they talk about it being cunning, baffling, and powerful, yeah? At the end of my drinking, I was drinking the cheapest beer in the off license, Crest, and I'd be like this, what's the cheapest beer in the shop? Do you know what I mean? I just wanted the cheapest one and the strongest one with the highest volume. And at the train station, the thought that came to my mind was, why don't you get a bottle of champagne? I thought, what? Champagne? When's the last time I drank champagne? You know, it really prettied it up. And then it says, and just get a rock. And the train come, and all I had in my name, I swear, all I had in my name was my pulley with my prison clothes in there, you know. And this pulley wasn't from my parents, wasn't from my family, it was from a man, a pen pal, you know, an old man that I used to write to, promise him sex and get all his money and get him to buy me stuff because my family weren't doing that shit for me, you know. So I had this pulley from this old man, bless him, you know. And I got on the train and I said, God, take me to Bournemouth. And I got to Bournemouth. I arrived late and I even phoned up the treatment center and said, you know what, I'm going to be late. And they was like, don't worry, that is new. I used to go to any appointment at any time. It didn't matter. You just have to see me. I weren't phoning nobody to say, I'm going to be late, you know. So that was something new. Anyway, I got to the treatment center and I did. I listened and I took on board all their suggestions. They said to me, go to 90 meetings. I went to 90 meetings. I had all my assignments done on time and shared it. That's something else. And I shared honestly. You know, there was no dishonesty. I shared all my shit, man, all them hidden secrets, all about them people that I hated, all about me being on the beat, you know, selling myself as a prostitute. I shared them in a group of people. I didn't care. I just knew that I never, ever wanted to go back to that life again. I was fucking desperate, right? And I feel quite emotional now, yeah? Because I remember how it was for me, yeah? And it was difficult, you know? And even in recovery, I have difficult times in recovery, but there's no way, yeah, I can give up what I've got today to just say, let me just have a drink, man, because this is too difficult. This is easy, you know, comparing to how it was. 2 o'clock in the night, I'm in my bed at home sleeping. 2 o'clock back then, I'm walking in the rain looking for a punter, you know, really, really fucking painful. So they told me what I had to do, and I'd done it. I've got commitments, you know, service commitments. And another thing, I always wanted to buy the expensive stuff, you know, because I wanted these people to like me. So I'd get Nescafe, you know, and they say, Susan, you know what, this month is too expensive. You're going to have to get the Morrison's brands or whatever you have to get. And I'd get, you know, the chocolate biscuits, the digestive ones, the name brand of them. And they'd be like, Susan, can you just get the, you know, and I'd be like, all right, then, like cheapskates, you know, because I wanted to like try and prove a point. But I couldn't even afford it myself. But I just had that in my mind. Well, they're going to give me the money back as long as I go with the receipt. Yeah. And I had greeter, you know, greeter commitments. I've even been back to prisons and done chairs. You know, I've been back to Holloway. I've been into a man's prison. And I used to hear them say, you can't keep what you got without giving it away. Yeah. And I used to copy that saying because that's what you do here, isn't it? You copy what other people does. I didn't understand what they meant. And when I went into Brixton prison and I'd done a chair, and I came out of the prison, the person that took me in there, I said, you know what? Now I understand what they mean. You can't keep what you got without giving it away. Because could you imagine if all of us got cleaned and just sat at home and watched telly? How would these people get the message? It's me, now I know what you're talking about. And it hits home. As long as you stay here, that's what I find. The longer I stay here, the longer these things are hitting home to me. You know, the more, I don't know how to explain it, but I'm kind of like seeing the light. It opens up a lot more, you know. So yeah, from treatment I graduated, touch, because I never ever completed anything, not in school, not at college, nothing, you know. Never ever completed anything, not even a relationship, you know. My relationships always ended sour. But so I've graduated from treatment, and then I've gone to college, done counselling courses and stuff. And then, you know, I was quite frightened to come back to London because that's where I come from, yeah, London. And I was quite feared up about coming back to London because that's where all my using friends are, so-called. All my using friends are down there, and if they see me, I'm going to end up using. But what I'd done was I stayed in Bournemouth for a little while, got myself a sponsor, and she guided me through the steps, you know, and that was amazing. I learned a lot. I learned about the truth about myself. I learned about who I wasn't, because I thought I was a really horrible person, you know, but I was just making mistakes, and I learned that it weren't all their fault, because it was everybody else's fault and not mine, and I had to take responsibility. And one of the biggest responsibilities I took was to go with God and to go back to London, you know. And I haven't picked up a drink or a drug since 2002, but I was in prison then, but I came out 2003. And next week Friday I'm going to be 5 years clean, you know, and I don't even smoke. I don't even smoke cigarettes anymore, you know. I've been on the aeroplane. I used to live in Seven Sisters, and I couldn't even, Seven Sisters Road, and I live St. Anne's Road, and I couldn't get home, yeah. I'd try and make my way home, and then something would draw me back, you know. And I've been on the plane. I've been on the plane 4 times this year, yeah. And I remember my first holiday that I went to, my partner took me, and I thought, right, a man's paying my fare. I'm obligated to him. You know, what do I owe him? And it was an amazing experience, because I went there, I saw mountains, I saw hills, really high hills. It's the Caribbean, Grenada. I saw these hills, I saw the Caribbean Sea, you know. I stopped smoking cigarettes over there, and I don't owe him anything, you know. He's still in my life today. I don't owe him nothing. Yeah, and I've been back, and I've paid for him just the other day to go to Spain. I thought, well, let me just give him a treat. But I couldn't afford the Caribbean, so I paid for the Spain. Do you know what I mean? But it's still something, and that's me giving back as well. You know, I never ever used to do that. I used to just think, right, I'm in a relationship, and they've got to look after me. And if you can't give me, then you got to fuck off, you know, come out of my life. But today I understand, even what I'm doing now, this ain't about being the main chair. This is about me sharing with you guys. It's about sharing, you know, I understand that. And through taking the steps as well, I understand step one, that I'm powerless, yeah? And powerless to me is being, having no power, just like being homeless, you got no home, being shoeless, you got no shoes. And power to me, step two, it talks about this power greater than yourself that will restore you to sanity, okay? I understand that power to be God, because step three talks about making a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. Yeah, so that's my power. That's where I tap into the source, through prayer, and not through meditation with music on it, but just sit in silence sometimes, you know, and just hearing what's going on, you know. And I believe the power is within. I don't have to go there or go there to try and get this power. I don't have to be in a big car to feel powerful anymore, or, you know, to be with a black guy that's got lots of jewelry on to feel, yeah, I'm saying something. I don't need that stuff. I tap into the power within myself, and I know that the power's there. The power's there, man. The power's restoring me every day, even when I do wrongs. You know, I had to make amends, yeah? Through this process, step 9, it talks about making amends. Step 8 talks about becoming willing, yeah? And step 9 talks about going out and making your amends. And I've done that. I've gone to the police stations and I've made amends. I had a big resentment with housing because they refused to house me, obviously, because I turned my house into a crack house, ended up in prison. They said that, you know, you've made yourself intentionally homeless because of that behaviour. I couldn't understand it, yeah? And just last year it was, I said, you know what, I've got to go and free these people because they were living in my head rent-free, you know, and I had to go and free myself from this amendment, free myself from this resentment. And by freeing myself, it's just strange. It's quite embarrassing as well. You know, I said to my sponsor, making amends is really embarrassing. And she says, no, Susan, it's a humbling experience. And I was like, yeah, wow, yeah, it is actually. Because when I said to the man, you know, I'm really sorry about, you know, I regret what I've done to you and that what I've done in the past, and I need to grow spiritually because this is about spiritual progress, yeah? And if I've got resentments, I'm blocked from God, yeah? And because I've got the housing on my mind, it's blocking me from having that relationship, the relationship that I want with God. So I've gone there and I've said this to him, you know, but I never said, yeah, I just said about spiritual, it's blocking me spiritually, yeah? And he was on the phone, by the way, but I'm in the housing place, but he wouldn't come down. And he said, I've never heard of anything like this before. Just move on. And I was like, getting a bit embarrassed. Like, he thinks I'm here because I want a flat. You know, he thinks I want him to rehouse me. But actually, I was serious. I was doing my work, man. I was doing what I had to do, you know, freeing myself. And that's another thing. When me and my partner, we went on holiday again this year to Grenada, and I saw one of the officers on the plane, and I said, wow, this is a good, you know, good opportunity, Susan, to make your amends. But she went on my list, and I went up to her, and I says, hi, do you remember me from Askham Grange? And she was like, not really. And then I said my name, and she was like, oh, yes, this is me. I'm really sorry for the trouble that I caused you in your, you know, because she used to be the life skills teacher. And I said, I'm really sorry for the trouble that I caused you when we was doing life skills. And she says, put it all behind you because I have. And there's me standing on the aisle on the plane like, all right then. And then I just had to walk off. But it's clearing, you know, 2 minutes to go, but it's clearing it. But what I've got from recovery is that I do make mistakes. And just today, I'm going to end with this. Today, I've got a problem with London Transport. I don't like paying my fares. Yeah, I don't like paying my bloody fares, man. And I've made amends to them, and I've gone to them, and I've paid the money that I've owed them, and I've said, you know, I'm really sorry, I'm not going to do this shit again. And I've done it today. And I got caught, and there I was saying, you know, cussing the guy, really like blaming him. And then I had to take responsibility, went in my purse and took out £20 and paid him. And those are the things that happen in my life, you know. I'm not perfect, but it's been a fantastic journey, and life does go on. And I know that there's one thing, I'm going to end it here. Yeah, I said that then, but I'm definitely going to end it here. That there's one thing none of us can get away from, right, and that's death. We're all going to die, right? And I know that when I was using, I was miserable, depressed, lonely, and really sad. And if I know I'm going to die and I've got today to live, I'm going to live it to the utmost. I don't have to be miserable, depressed. I want to be happy, joyous, and free. And that's what I am today. I'm free to do anything what I want. Boom. Bye.
Thank you.